Hello, friends. Welcome to today's episode of the Empowered Together Show, part of our international network of women around the world who are sharing their inspirational stories with us. Today's guest is the amazing Megan Bell. I am such a fan of this woman. She is truly amazing. She is the director of engagement at Daylight, a professional learning platform for philanthropic advisors. With over 15 years of experience building mission-driven partnerships, Meg is passionate about making philanthropy more accessible and integrating giving into everyday wealth conversations. Such a beautiful bunch of work. Beautiful. She hosts the Illuminate Philanthropy Show, a podcast that spotlights everyday practitioners who are advancing generosity and innovation across the sector. She is also the creator of My Aunt is a Nun, another show, a storytelling project inspired by the women who were, in many ways, among the first philanthropists. And they are committed to serving those most vulnerable and shaping a more just world. I am Hope Katz Gibbs, producer and founder of this show and this network with a whole bunch of other truly amazing women. So let's get started. Welcome to the show, Meg.
Thank you, Hope. I appreciate that introduction. That's a very generous of you. Thank you.
Well, you are amazing, truly. All right, so let's go back. Let's go back in time. Tell us about your favorite childhood memory.
Wow. Okay. There are lots, but I'll give the one that really, I think, kind of frames a lot for me. I'll first start by saying I'm the youngest of five siblings. Our names all start with M, so I respond to Mark, Michelle, Mary, or Monica on any given day. We were raised by a single mom, really on the fringe of a middle-class neighborhood, so sort of masking poverty was a big exercise in my life. Sort of this idea of living in scarcity was something that, unfortunately, I experienced. But I share that because living with five siblings and having a single mom who had women in her life, such as Joan and Christine, we really were kind of, you know, if I looked at today, our own collaborative giving circle, truly, we were our own sort of, we were just our own resource. We gave life to one another. We just, everything we did for the good of one another. So I share a childhood experience. We grew up in this neighborhood where there was a community pool, and I'm a big swimmer. And every 4th of July, they would have a big celebration, and the celebration would include a belly flop contest. And so I am the proud champion of the Cherry Creek Town Homes belly flop contest for over 4 years in a row. And I just remember that day at the pool because not besides the belly flop contest is they would put watermelons in the pool full of oil. And we imagine five kids each getting a shot at a watermelon in a pool. We swam our lives off and would just get that watermelon and be so proud because we knew we could have a watermelon. And so they'd throw coins in the pool and we would just dive in there and find as many coins as we could. It was just this collective effort on all of my siblings' part to be like, we are going to just dominate this day. But, you know, I just remember being on the edge of that diving board. And I was a round girl in a little yellow bikini and I just jumped off. And I think that's kind of my life in general is just sort of like jumping off and just going for it. And I'm very fortunate that I was celebrated by so many people when I jumped. And I've got that family to catch me as well. So anyway, that's just one thing I'm always like, we'll always, when I'm with my family, we'll always talk about the belly flop. The belly flop contest always comes up. So
that is amazing, Meg. You know, I didn't know that about you. And I'm so glad you just shared this with all of us because, you know, when we meet new friends, we don't really ask always the backstory. And that's a big backstory.
Well, thank you.
So thank you for sharing that. So what advice would you give that younger self bravely jumping off the diving board?
Well, I think that younger self in that age, I jumped without fear. And then you begin to get you mature and self-awareness all of a sudden comes and opinion comes and ego evolves. And so then you sort of resist that jumping. I would just say jump like you did when you were five. You know, I would, you know, growing up the way I did in scarcity, which I couldn't identify it was scarcity till much later in my life. The advice is, you know, live in abundance, like truly live in abundance. I have literally right here stuck to my computer, live, not endure, because I feel like a lot of my childhood was this just enduring, getting through it, and evolve, not die, bloom in place. I would tell that little self that, like, yeah, you will find a life of abundance. It will come your way.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And it has. It has. So tell us about the field you got into, because that makes perfect sense now.
Yeah. Well, the field I got into, and nothing about my career has been linear. And I often wish that I had just that one specific area of expertise. I love it when people can really say, I know this, this is my area, I'm grounded in it, I'm known for it. That is not me. My career has been solely in the space of service, but it's been in different industries. But I really came into service because, one, growing up as the youngest of five in a somewhat impoverished family, I always just wanted to help. And we relied heavily on organizations to support us. And so I knew I wanted to make sure that I could preserve that for other people. I always knew I was an empath. I can't walk past someone and not feel what they're going through. And I thought the best way I could channel that is going into social work. So when I graduated from Seattle University, which is a Jesuit university, known for sort of man for others, service to others, social justice. That was also very profound, is being taught in that sort of environment. I joined the Jesuit Volunteer Corps, which is much like the Peace Corps but domestic. You get taken, or you get moved to a state, a city you've never been in. You live in a community with five people, and you literally live in the population that you serve. So I was a case manager for a homeless shelter for women. Addicted women and children. And it was in that moment that I knew I wanted to. I thought at that time I wanted to be a social worker. If you told me I was going to be an executive director of a nonprofit. I learned pretty quickly that social work, direct service, probably was not best for an empath like me in terms of my ability to really draw boundaries. Not that I overstep, but just how emotional it was for me and how much of that I carried. I also knew that financially it wasn't going to be sustainable to be in direct service. So I've worked really hard to be as connected to the work, but in different capacities. So whether it's doing community relations for a new startup, whether it's doing engagement for what I'm doing right now at Daylight, whether it's all the organizations I've supported by being on the board, there's just been multiple ways. I'm not articulating this very well, but what I'm saying is, like, I think at the core of who I am and what I value deeply is service. And that service has shown up, and the service I do is the most supported in the philanthropic field.
Yes, and it's really beautiful how you followed your heart and you've set boundaries. You knew what would be like slightly dangerous for your psyche.
Well, I would tell anyone that I learned early on, it was probably good that in the 4 years that I did direct service, I realized this wasn't going to be a sustainable career for me sooner than later, versus, giving it 18 years and then finding out. So it was the hardest lesson I ever learned, was learning what I wasn't, what I thought I was going to do, I'm not doing. So
Yeah.
that was a big lesson as well. But very profound. That whole experience just profoundly impacted me. And, obviously I wanted to stay in it. And, when I did leave for a while, there was a motto we had in the JVC called "Ruined for Life." Like, once you've experienced it, you're kind of ruined for life. And that just sort of ruined me for life. And I've just sort of stayed in this space since then.
Wow, so beautiful the work you do. So,
Thanks.
what's the legacy you hope to leave behind?
Well, I have two boys right now, and it's so crazy. Just the other day, my son was asked what he wanted to do, and he said, I want to be in philanthropy like my mom.
Aww.
And I thought, oh my gosh, when I was 12, I didn't even know the word philanthropy. It was not in my vocabulary. I didn't realize that what my mom's two friends were doing by, dropping off food and money and clothes to us was philanthropic, right? It's this idea of giving of time, giving of resources, truth and testimonial and treasure, right? So the idea that my son already articulates that he wants to be in philanthropy and can tell people what philanthropy is, that's pretty exciting to me. I always tell my young boys, I want to make sure that whatever they do, that they are kind, that they are engaged, and that they're global citizens. And I think I just want my legacy to be one of connection and connectivity, and one of relationship and being in relation with one another.
I love that. I love that you're bringing these amazing young boys into the world to be the men that we hope to see. I think I told you, my son graduated from Harvard's architecture program last week here in May, at the end of May, 2025. And my thing to him, not to be rude, but please just do not grow up to be a dickhead, right? Like, this is my
100%.
only ask, that you use all the power and the brilliance that is
100%.
you, right, to make the
Yes.
world a better place. And actually, his master's thesis is on data centers, but the social impact of them.
Oh, wow.
And he didn't, at first I asked him if he would maybe consider solving the homeless problem, or trying to, with architecture. And he came to me after he really looked into it for about a year or so, and he said, "Mom, this is not an architecture program problem, not an architecture problem." So, but he didn't tell me that the data centers, he was looking with the social impact of them, right? Because it's a huge resource draw and
And
millions.
drain, honestly. I mean, it's yeah, there's a lot of implications to host our data. It's not, we talk cloud, but that's connectivity, that's electricity, that's lights on. That's a lot of
Water too. I mean, it's like,
that oh.
you live in Arizona, right? It's sucking the, anyway. So there's so many things that our young men, we talk a lot at Incandescent about empowering women and the beauty of women, and I don't not think about the young men,
I
because I
don't
think
either.
that they're important, especially our sons, right? Like, it's our job as powerful women to shape these young men to go out and do really good things with the resources that we have poured into them.
Don't be an asshole.
No,
Yeah.
you
Sorry. Don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but yeah, I'm with
whatever you
every day. I'm like, my job, besides my job, making them good roommates, because they will not clean up their rooms. It's like, my job as your mother is to make you a good roommate. And not doing well on that, but I am doing well on on really emphasizing, like, just be good. Just be good. Just be kind. And I watch them every day, and there are things that they do that reinforces that I think they're on that path. But also being just globally aware, just knowing what's happening beyond themselves, because I think that's really important, especially with these young kids who have really lacked and been lacked relationships because of COVID and have been a little bit more in isolation than you and I certainly were. This need to like connect, find ways to connect and be and relate. So yeah. So I'm all for
Power to the boys.
strong women.
So, what life event, other than the diving, shaped you?
There's been so many life events that have shaped me. I mean, the diving, actually, I don't know that I realized that and it shaped me like it did until I shared that story today. The JVC certainly shaped me a great deal. You can't go into a community you've never worked in, and live with five people you've never met at $85 a month, and working in direct service and not be completely impacted. I think what was fascinating about that experience with the JVC was the hardest part wasn't the work, it was the community, which you wouldn't think the rub would be with the community, but I almost think it was created for that reason. This idea of bringing five unknowns into a space, it was like Real World before there was a Real World. It was certainly Bravo before there's any of this reality TV, but it was with great purpose. But you really had to learn how to live in community, which meant you had to be somewhat okay with not being okay with other people. Does that make sense? Like, even in my podcast with religious women, they talk about the beauty of living in community, both the rub, and the rub of it, but that it's powerful and it's beautiful. And I think for me, community is certainly something, even since I've been young, green, raised by a community, is that I crave and I seek to create and build and be in. So, I think that was a life event. I've had a most recent, I mean, I can always say birthing my children was a life event for sure, especially my 10-pound, 9-ounce baby. But I think that, yeah, when I think about some milestones in my life, it's certainly jumping off the diving board, going into the Jesuit Volunteer Corps. I'd also say that recently I relocated my family from the Pacific Northwest to the desert, to Tempe, Arizona. Did that for numerous reasons. But I don't, that's been probably the most challenging thing I've done of late. It's very uncomfortable space that I'm living in. It's a very unknown, I lack community. All the things I work for, I kind of don't have there. But it has expanded me tremendously. It's required me to be more thoughtful and present with myself. And I just keep, this is where I kind of had to come up with that bloom in place. Like, this may not be ideal. This may not be where I want to be in this minute. This is not what I thought it was going to be, but I'm here now and I have to make this work. And so bloom in place. So I even planted a garden to remind myself of that.
Oh, that is so cool, Meg. You're awesome. So, what, do you have a purpose statement for your life?
Well, it's so funny you should ask that because one of the most profound professional and personal development experiences I went through was actually through Deanne Yuen, who is the founder of Daylight. She and that's where I met you, Hope, was in purpose school. And that was, I don't know how you felt about that, but for me, particularly being invited at that time and to sit in a space amongst other folks doing incredible work, I was sort of intimidated. I really intimidated. Like I didn't have a place or space or voice in that. I've since learned I do, and that's how I'm actually here with you. But part of that whole experience was coming up with your own purpose statement. This idea of if somebody sort of asked you what your purpose is, what that could be. And it could be for a lot of people, it was differently, but I'll never forget. We went into a retreat and we spent days. I mean, this wasn't like you just wrote it in a day. It's like you wrote some ideas and you went back and formulated it, and then you had to present it. And I just remember kind of presenting, and I had like a whole long sentence, and one of my friends, Holly Lee, was like, "Badass, you're just a badass, you know, you're," and I was like, "Okay." And I was like, "Yeah, with a big heart." She goes, "No, hella heart." It's hella heart, badass servant, ultimate doer. And I don't know if that means purpose, but that's how I define, like, my heart is so big that it's expansive. It has lots of space to give of time and of just relation. I'm a badass servant. That's all I do. My question is, how can I help you? My husband will tell you I'm a 2 on the Enneagram. I am a helper, and that comes with all the beauty and the bruises for sure. And then as much as I feel I'm strategic, I really am an executor in a lot of ways. Like, just tell me what you want and I'll do it. So, this whole hella heart badass servant is sort of encompasses me.
I absolutely love that. And as a friend of yours, I know that. So as a member of the Empower Together Network, all of our members get this 20-minute interview that we post all over the Incandescent channels and Spotify and iHeart and all that good stuff and Apple. But you also have the opportunity to teach a class. And I haven't talked to you offline about this, but it would be amazing if you could teach a class about creating your purpose statement. I think that would be amazing.
I wouldn't be able to do it as near as a facilitator we had, but I certainly could prompt the conversation for sure. There really is a magic to it and a technique to it. And it requires time and space, but I'm happy to support for sure. I will tell you the one thing, I'm also a storyteller. I want to be a storyteller, which is why I took on that project for my aunt as a nun. That was a personal project that was just me who felt like the stories needed to be shared, but I also needed to hear those stories at that time, particularly when COVID was hitting. It was the first Trump administration. It's almost like a deja vu for me right now. So I'm hoping that my podcast will have somewhat of a reemergence because I think if people listen to it, they really can draw from the power of these women who really live simply, but live in the same complex world that we do. They just navigate it differently in a context around prayer and community and faith and spirituality. And so I want to tell stories. I want to tell stories, which is why, I want to tell stories. So that's what I want to
Do you think that's your superpower?
I don't know. Yes. Wanting to tell them, telling them, well, I'm not sure, but wanting to at least get the stories and share out. Yes. I would love for that to be my superpower. Storyteller, or, I think really when I think about it's so funny because I'm like, again, I didn't have this area of expertise. I'm kind of a generalist of all things, but I think at the heart of what I do is I just seek to relate and find a connection and be in place and space with people. That's it.
It's beautiful. I love how you lit up when you started talking about this. I went through the Martha Beck life coach training. I love Martha Beck, and she talks a lot about being on purpose. What's your purpose? How do you find your purpose and then live your life in that glory? So MarthaBeck.com for anyone who's listening who wants to check her out. But I very much see you doing that, you know. So keep it up. And we're here, the Empowered Together Network is here to support you and always possible.
Well, and I so appreciate that you've put a group of women together. I have another quote that sits here, and it's like, I want to be the woman that, doesn't point out that the crown is crooked, like that really, like, no, I want to be that woman that, you know what I'm saying? That whole idea of like, we're not here to bring one another down, but we need to raise one another up, right?
Amen.
So I just appreciate your interest in making sure you lift those voices and that we know we're in a community, whether we know the other women out there, but we're all in this space together. So thank you.
Well, that is my life's work, is to like make people feel like they're not alone, right? We are all in this together. I mean, even if you don't believe it, we are, right? We all feel this, and women especially, right now with all this
Yeah.
toxic masculinity just bursting all over the world, I find myself increasingly just like being icked out by men in general. I find it really hard. I'll walk down the street, I'm like, are you an interesting gentleman? Like, are you even someone that I would want to talk to, much less vote for or, get into a relationship with? And I think it's really complicated. And research is showing that young women especially cannot find partners that they trust and do not want to have babies with them. And it's too expensive now anyway. So we're at this weird juxtaposition, this time in the world, right? Where women are making choices for themselves, and as much as they want to tamp us down and take away all our rights, I really have faith that we will not allow that. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting time. I do want to correct myself on this quote because I do think it empowers everything that you are helping. It's be the woman who fixes another woman's crown without telling the world it was crooked.
Oh, thank you.
And I think with women, I was on a talking to one of our impact philanthropy advisors through Daylight. And she's in higher ed, and she was just talking about the fact that white men, particularly, are not going to school anymore. They aren't seeing the value, and that there's like this kind of crisis among men. So I feel like I feel like the world's definitely off its axis, and things are sort of auto-correcting. And I said to her, I'm like, well, and she had kind of said like, we got to figure that out. And I'm like, and I this is gonna sound, I'm like, but do we? Like, maybe this is a time where women come, because we do value our education. We do look for community. We are philanthropic. And not to say that men aren't. I'm not suggesting that at all, at all. But I just think it's an interesting time to be a woman, and I think it's an interesting opportunity for us all to sort of, I think if you're living in this moment and you're not questioning and really like observing, you're missing the moment. If something doesn't come out of this profoundly for you, you're really missing the moment.
I agree. I'm having a little bit of a struggle with my friends who are like, I can't look. I'm like, you gotta look. I love
You've
you.
got to
And
look.
I understand why you don't want to look. I sometimes don't want to look, but we gotta look. This is how
Yeah, we.
they're won. This is how the Jews were carted off in trains and allowed to starve and die. And we have to push back. We can't allow this. And, another thought that came to me when you were speaking was, I was the communications director for the U.S. district for the city of Fairfax schools when my kids were little. And I got to sit around the table with the superintendent and all these brilliant educators. And at that time, this was like 10, 15 years ago, there was a huge push for girls to take more AP classes. The superintendent, the magnificent George Stepp that I worked for, he wanted kids to take at least 5 AP classes. I said, I respect that, but I think kids are going to start jumping off the roof because that's some pre too much pressure. And actually, that is what happened to some kids. They just couldn't handle it. But that aside, this push to make girls smarter, more educated, more confident has succeeded. And we are seeing that, in higher ed, that what is happening and what do young men want? I mean, they seem to in droves support this administration, and that is we're just we're it's a civil war brewing, right, to me.
The rub is real. The time is interesting. It is definitely a time of volatility and uncertainty and complexity and ambiguity. And that's a lot, right? That is a lot. So, and I appreciate, I mean, I think it's so easy to want to retreat. I want to just retreat because one, what can I do to help? What can I really do? Right. And let other people solve it. We can't assume other people will do it. We can't retreat. We can, and I know it's hard to listen and watch it, but you have to, I just encourage like awareness, like be mindful and yes, figure out the many ways you could do something. And it isn't, you know, whether it's writing to your senator or if it's going into your own food banks or if it's dropping off clothing. I mean, there's ways that we can, you know, at a small level, make some impact. But yeah, we have to be engaged citizens. We have to be educated citizens. We just do. It's a populace that's not educated is not a good thing.
Yeah,
So,
so the founding fathers knew and said, and so now,
yes.
and that's why Cynthia DeLorenzi, Alina Z, and Eva Ross and I started this project the day after the election. You know, we all came together for episode one, and you know, we've launched it ever since. And our goal is to bring in, you know, 100 women by the end of 2025 to come together because power in numbers, right? So we figure out how we can sparkle and shine together, how we can help. That's why I love the philanthropy work that you and you at DN do, because you're educating people about how to be more philanthropic. And this is also a time when people are holding on to their money because fear is pervasive, right? We're afraid of everything, and for good reason. There's a lot to be afraid of, especially, you know, LA, this terrible nonsense that's happening in LA, this catastrophe. This, you know, on the 14th of June, there's going to be this parade here in DC. Just things are boiling, you know. So coming together and bringing voices together.
Yeah, you're doing sort of what is called collaborative philanthropy in a lot of ways. I mean, there's more formal, you know, definition to this, but this idea of collectively bringing around women to empower one another with our words, our thoughts, and our experiences, right? It's a collective thing, and anything around collectivity is powerful. So,
Yeah,
thank you.
well, hopefully you'll teach us more about that. There's so many classes you can teach the Empowered Together Network, and that's the initiative. You know, we started it, and now we're just bringing in members and honoring and supporting and promoting them, and then the classes will begin in the fall. So we'll talk more about that, and I'm so
Talk more.
excited to promote you. All right, just a couple more questions. So what is your anthem song?
Well, that's funny. The anthem song came as a result of me actually interviewing one of our IPAs, and she'd said to me that she had a mentor that said to her, you know, like, you've got to wake up in the morning, look in the mirror, and find your anthem song and dance before you do anything. And so she has inspired me to always ask what one's anthem song is. And I guess I'm inspiring you to do that as well. And the anthem song can change. Like, I checked in here with her yesterday. I said, "What's your anthem song today?" She's like, "I'm not sure I have one, but somehow I was singing, She Works Hard for Her Money." And I said, "Oh, that brings me back to 9 to 5, right?" But, you know, there is two songs that I will play somewhat on repeat. One is by Alicia Keys called Good Job. And it's this idea of you're doing good job, good job, good job. Like, just this reminder of like, stay in it. It's good work. And then Find Your People is a great song. Find Your People. And that just reminds me that, you know, if you can find the people that lift you up, that support you, that understand you and get you, that's where you should seek. That's what you should seek. So I'd say the Alicia Keys, Good Job. And I should know the name of the artist that sings Find Your People, but I don't off the top of my head. But yeah.
Well, we'll find it and we'll put it in the liner notes, which is also where you can link to find Megan and her work and Daylight. Please check out daylightadvisors.com. It's really powerful work. DNUN is just an amazing entrepreneur and educator and all around good human. We love her very much. And we got to launch the Illuminate Philanthropy show through Incandescent, and they're going to pick it up and take it on the road next. But it's
Yeah.
really been an honor and a privilege. I'll tell you my anthem song.
I was just going to ask your anthem song. What is it?
Power to the people, right on.
Power to the people,
Goes
right on.
in my head all the time. Like, I'll just dance around the
Well,
house doing the dishes, you know, because I feel like that is, I felt this way when Clinton was president. I started a nonprofit. I was in graduate school. My nonprofit was called The Writings on the Wall, and I still will bring it back to life. I started it, but then other things took over. I want kids around the country to paint mural on buildings about what they want to do to make the world a better place. I turned it into a project that was at the Capitol Children's Museum for a long time. I had an architect build a wish house, and the kids painted bricks. So, and it was there, it was supposed to be there for like 6 weeks, and it was there for 6 months. Just these wish bricks, right? So taking that out there, empowering these kids. And then as I talked to you about Meg, Incandescent Kids magazine is coming also later this year, where we're really teaching kids to think like reporters, right? So this idea, power to the people, be good, do the work that you're doing, right? Just be
Well,
kind.
if you need a little face of that kid's paper or need the little podcaster or someone to lend voice to that, my little Campbell, the philanthropist that he
Oh
is
yeah.
a
Oh, absolutely.
he's doing broadcasting at his middle school. He's a broadcaster for the middle school,
Oh yeah.
so
Bring it. All right. Good to know. He's now
yeah,
on
so he'll
the
be one of your first readers, so make sure you let me know when it launches.
No, and that's the idea. We want to teach kids to write articles, but also you can tell stories through illustration, photography, videography, games, podcasts, videos. So, all of this is what we want to teach these kids to do. We want to publish their books. We want to get their thoughts and feelings out there so that they can, we just give them that lift. All of these moms out there, we just want to raise them up, and all the journalists that I know and love, so it's a K-22 project where college kids will help high schoolers, help middle schoolers, help elementary schoolers learn to think
Cool.
critically. So
Thank you.
anyway, I'm going to pull you in on that. All right, last questions. All right.
Oh, yeah.
My aunt is a nun. As we finish this up, tell us about that amazing project.
My aunt is a nun, a Catholic nun. My great uncle was a Jesuit priest, and so that I would say also is what got me to Seattle University in Jesuit education, and then to the JVC. In fact, it was one of the my aunt's favorite priest who was doing JVC in Alaska that said, "You have to do this." So that influenced me. So I think I kind of alluded to this earlier, is that when I was in a very unsettled place, and I felt like I always turned to my aunt Sheila for guidance, and just her voice alone just provides such solitude and comfort that I wanted to really, really take her voice and kind of offer it to everybody. This whole idea that you've got a nun in your pocket. And as I started doing this, I realized like it's not just my aunt that has this incredible amount of wisdom that's real, like just because they're holy, they're human, right? And I wanted to make sure everybody was reminded that we're all flawed, even if we are ones that have committed our life to Christ or have committed ourselves to community. They struggle, they have anxiety, they have depression, they go through their own intimacy issues. I think we just sort of think they're women in habits that pray, and that's about all that they do. But if you actually look back, they were some of the first philanthropists. I mean, they're the reason there are schools and nursings and food banks and if churches, like they are the women behind all of those institutions. And it's shameful that they can't be ordained and practice on the way that priests can, but they are behind the scenes doing remarkable things for the community and the world. And I really wanted to just make them real, bring them into like the mainstream. Nobody even, I just asked my little goddaughter, I was like, she asked what a nun was because she's at a Catholic school, but there are no nuns wearing habits or teaching anymore, right? I mean, so you can't even identify one anymore if you wanted to. Very rarely, like when I see them, it's usually when I'm abroad and in European countries. But like I always get, because you can identify them. So just to remind people that there's these amazing women in the world doing things that are worthy of acknowledgement, but their wisdom, like just their wisdom. There's so many things that I take away. Like the only word for God is love. And I want to be that friend that holds a teacup when it's heavy, right? Or I may be whole, I mean, holy, but I'm still human. All the things, like they just are as challenged as we are. And I felt like I wanted to bring that to the surface. So it was truly a personal project. I did it on my own. I went to like create your own podcast class, and then the next thing I know, I just got a microphone and I went and traveled to meet these women. Didn't have any structure around what I was going to ask them, and then had all that content and had to put it into a storytelling project. And so that's what my aunt is a nun. I'd love to carry it on, but I was only fortunate to get five episodes done. But those five is I'm really proud of it. I would say that's probably my biggest accomplishment and best piece of work I've done. And so, yeah, it's kind of my thing. My aunt is a nun.
I love
So,
it. Well, I'm hoping Incandescent can help you with that. So Incandescent Radio and
thank you.
TV would be thrilled to. So we'll talk about that offline. But Megan Bell, thank you for being part of the Empowered Together Network. You are awesome. People, look at our listeners, readers, and viewers. Please look at Meg's work. She is a beautiful human being and an inspiration to us all. And I can't wait for you to start teaching some classes to our network because
All right.
you have a lot to share.
Well, I
All right.
appreciate
Is
that. Thank
there?
you for
Be
validating.
well.
All
All
right.
right.
Many blessings.
Thank you all. I'm Hope Katz Gibbs. You're listening to the Empowered Together show on Incandescent Radio, Incandescent TV, and a bunch of other places. We'll talk to you all soon.